Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Verses 24 to 26 explain how to achieve the level of samadhi described in 20 to 23. One should practice yoga with determination and faith and not deviate. In the purport to verse 24, Srila Prabhupada writes, "The yoga practitioner should be determined and should patiently prosecute the practice without deviation. One should be sure of success at the end and pursue this course with great perseverance, not becoming discouraged if there is any delay in the attainment of success. Success is sure for the rigid practitioner. Similarly, the practice of yoga, especially bhakti yoga in Krishna consciousness, may appear to be a very difficult job. But if anyone follows the principles with great determination, the Lord will surely help, for God helps those who help themselves." So that faith is important, as Vishwanath points out, that this process of developing from Shraddha to Prema, that's based on faith, right? So as the faith matures, one moves forward. That's the important element. It's not happening because of something else. It's because of faith. Because if faith's not there, then one does not continue with anything, right? You get on a bus, you think it's going someplace, and then you start getting doubts, you know, then you will definitely get off the bus. You know, you're not going to continue, right? So that's the whole thing. If that faith is there, then it will continue. You will, and so now Prabhupada says the rigid practitioner, right? So now what is the obstacles that get in the way, right? You know, there's some wall somewhere or something like that, or, you know, what is it, you know, pile of sand or anartas, right? So it's going to be the anartas that are the problem. So that means one way not be always that fixed, right? Means, let's say fixed means that the practice is always so perfect. But someone who is, what does Prabhupada says? Rigid. Rigid means, with, you know, how you say, fixed, right? So nishta. So they'll be successful. So then it's a matter of being determined that even if it's not going so well, that one will continue doing it until it does go well. And going well, then naturally the result will come. Right? Because you're doing it for Krishna, not because you've just so expertly done it. So here then it mentions that the Lord, it may appear to be a difficult job, but anyone who follows the principles with great determination, the Lord will surely help, for God helps those who help themselves. So in other words, that gap between your ability to do it nicely and being fixed, you know, it means where you are now and being in the position of being a rigid practitioner, that then Krishna will help. Right? If you're determined. If you're not determined, you don't have faith, yeah, and of course, Krishna's not going to help. Right? Does that make sense? So one must be convinced. Like that. Remember, I think it was Shatadanya. He was sitting in Prabhupada's room, It may have just been he and he came in to do something and all that, and probably just looked at him and went, "Are you convinced?" You know, it's kind of like, about what? About, you know, that I'm cleaning the floor, about, you know, like, so Prabhupada's point, if you're convinced, then you will be successful and you will preach. Because if you're convinced, then naturally you like to give it to others, right? That's probably one of the very rare uses of the Western false ego. If they're doing it, everybody's got to do it. So if you're Krishna conscious, the whole world better be Krishna conscious. So, you know, so it works. It works. Such determination results from strong faith in the process of bhakti. Faith, shraddha, is defined in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya as follows. Firm conviction to execute the order of the Lord is known as faith. If one has faith, he is firmly convinced that simply by rendering devotional service to Lord Krishna, all other activities are automatically performed, including ritualistic duties, sacrifices, yoga, and the speculative pursuit of knowledge. If one is convinced that devotional service to the Lord includes everything, no other activity is required. Right? So that determination, that's what's going to make one successful. So that means it's based on this faith. So faith that it's only Krishna consciousness, only devotional activities. So, of course, that would then define if someone's just fixed in doing the direct activities of Krishna consciousness. Right, chanting and preaching. There's nothing else that needs to be done. No other aspects of material existence need to be attended to. One will be successful. Right? One doesn't have to worry that in the Vedas that it says, you know, you must do different things in the Shraddha rites and have a son to do that Shraddha rites and do so many other things. One doesn't have to worry. And none of that is important. Because you're pleasing Krishna. He's the original forefather. Right, so therefore, you know what I'm saying? You don't need a son to worship Krishna. You need a son to worship Krishna. If that was important, then many of us would be in trouble, right? You know, some of us would be okay, you know, like that. Does that make sense? Right? So, therefore, it's not a problem. But, now in this is now a very important step here, is that if one has material, needs, you know, the concept of material possession, material affinity, then that means what it is that you are interested in, that must be connected to Krishna. Right? So that may be where, okay, then one has family, one has children, one, you know, does so many duties, that would be considered normally your material duties, you know, or religious duties. But still, it doesn't change this point, because one's only doing it in connection with Krishna. So the point is this devotional element is its perfection, not that it's being done because of religious obligation. Does that make sense? So when we say perform one's duty, that doesn't mean separate devotional service. It means that you have to do something to show your affection to Krishna. Right? It can't just be anything. So what is the medium? The medium is the prescribed duties. But it's not that the prescribed duties are what's making everything perfect. Does that make sense? So in other words, prescribed duties are defined in Varnashram, but it's not Varnashram that's generating the devotion. Right? It's not generating the result. It's your devotion to Krishna. And because of the need, you're following Varnashram. But that's because of your own attachments. Yes?
Following Varnashram can also be a way to position yourself in a way so you will obtain love of Krishna.
But how will, by positioning yourself in that way, how will that make you develop love for Krishna?
It will remove obstacles.
But remove what obstacles?
Material attachments or...
But how would Varnashram remove material attachments if it's not connected to Krishna? You understand?
Yeah.
He said, like Indra, is he known, is he famous throughout the universe for being detached from material enjoyment?
Not really.
Okay, not really. Okay. And he is, but he is, you know, of those who are attached, the most pious living entity. In other words, of those attached to sense gratification, he's the most pious living entity in the universe. Right? Then beyond him are those pious souls that are not attached to sense gratification.
Yeah,
right?
So,
yes, he's falling. But everybody else does also. But the point is my point is it's not because you're following Varnashram that is what you're getting the benefit from. It's because you're following in connection to Krishna. Otherwise, you can follow it and things may go nicely, obstacles are removed, but if they're removed, why you'll serve Krishna in that removed environment of no obstacles? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, what is an obstacle?
An obstacle is...
It means define an actual practical obstacle that one would follow Varnashram to mitigate.
Playing computer games.
Playing computer games. Okay, so you are saying that there should be a Varn Ashramic way of playing computer games.
No, but since there isn't, then...
So you only play ones that go back into like the medieval kind of time, because the feudal system's closer to the Varn Ashram and all that, so you generally stay with Dungeons, Dragons, and that. You stay away from, you know, like all these modern car racing and what's that thing about? The one where you steal the cars, felony, Grand Theft Auto, you'd stay away from that, because that would not be proper and stuff like that.
Now, okay.
That means gladiators would be okay, right? Because that goes back even farther.
Okay, different example. Sex enjoyment.
Okay, sex enjoyment.
Yeah.
Okay, so... So, how would Varnashram mitigate the difficulties arising in sex enjoyment?
They would put it under certain control.
Certain control, and how will that certain control get rid of the problems?
It will get rid of the problem because it removes the problem. But
how does it remove? How does Varnashram remove the problem? What is the problem? What's the problem in sex enjoyment?
The problem is that it makes us deviate from focusing our attention to Krishna.
Okay, but how does it make one deviate?
It feels as a controller and enjoyer.
Yeah. Okay. What's the controller and enjoyer? So how does Varnashram solve that problem?
Pretty much just commands us to. Not deal on this urge, yeah.
But people have children. Is there another...
So it puts it into a controlled concept. Or
so just because it's in that controlled concept, that gets rid of the urge?
No. No, but since we don't act on the urge, then we don't get the negative reactions.
So you don't act on it, so you don't get the negative reaction. But the desire for sense gratification is still there. You're just not willing to get too involved because it gives trouble. So how is that removing the obstacle? Because the desire for sense gratification still remains.
Well, you would probably realize through practice that you're better off in this way, and then by not
better off in which way?
Without acting on these urges, and then without feeding these urges, then they would subside.
Okay, but is that something that's going to happen very nicely in one lifetime?
Probably not.
That sounds like you're describing the slow path.
Yeah.
Like over thousands or millions of lifetimes. So, but the point is this, so how does it get rid of sex life? You have a higher taste for Krishna. Okay, then you just don't get involved. But at the same time, as you're involved because you have a taste for this, Laura. Yes?
You do it in a way that's pleasing to Krishna, so it connects you to Krishna.
Yes, in other words, there is a connection of sexual activity to Krishna. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But the point is what's the best thing to connect to Krishna? Something that's Vedic according to Varnashram socially, or something that's not? that's speculative.
Something that's very difficult.
Yes, so that's the point. It's just like you could go out and, you know, probably order some, you know, aluminum, you know, Arctic lamps and, you know, plates and cups and all that. But would that be as nice as, you know, silver or gold? No. Okay, so that's the point, is that these others, then the difficulty is that do they even know? It means just like this. Sex means it's an intimate interaction between men and women, okay? Just as a definition, a general definition, right? We're all comfortable with that, right? Okay, now let us look at this. Does the Vedic literature have definitions for what's male and female? Yes. Do they have definitions for what's intimate and what's not? Okay. Now let's look at, take it a step further. Does the West have definitions of what's male and female? No. Do they have definitions of what is intimacy? So then how will they actually be able to engage that sexual desire? Because they don't even know what it is. You understand? So that's the point, is that they won't actually be able to deal with what it is and remove it mechanically. You understand? Because how can you remove something you don't know what it is? It's just a feeling, it's an urge, something, a need, you know, like that. But what is that? A need for what? Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So they can't even define that. So how will they, you know what I'm saying? So their thing is just the interaction of the sense and the sense object. But the point is then why is there need of relationship? You know what I'm saying? If it's just senses and sense objects, why do boys and girls worry that the other one's off with someone else? You know, other than it's just a lost opportunity. But if the opportunity is not lost, why would they get upset? Because there's the emotional content. That's not part of it, but that's not understood. So the emotional content, that's what comes from the fidelity. The greater the fidelity, the higher the emotional content. Means not going off with someone else. Like that. Does that make sense? It also has something to do with music or something, but you know. So, does that make sense? So, the point is there is that it's the quality of what you're dealing with. Because if you're dealing, you have to deal in knowledge. Otherwise, how are you going to get a result? You do something with no knowledge and you get a result, then it just happened. So, how are you going to be freed from that desire for that if you don't even know what happened? You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. So one could say, no, but okay, it happened, now you'll deal with it. But if you don't have the knowledge of what you're dealing with, how are you going to actually know what to do with what you have now? You know what I'm saying? Because the field doesn't, the situation may change, but still the elements of the field are the same. Does that make sense? So the point is Varnashram, along, you know, in other words, we're discussing in here of that we have faith that it's only, if one is convinced that devotional service to the Lord includes everything, no other activities required. So some people say, oh, we don't need Varnashram, this, that. But the point is we need devotional service. So devotional service has to be performed through a medium. So do we just do anything we want? Right? We want to worship the Lord, okay? So, how do we do that? Yes, we follow Shastra Pancharatra. So does the Shastra define the form of the deity? Do they define what rituals can be performed? Right? You know, so all rules and regulations are defined. So what's the devotion? Yes, so between the devotee and the Lord, that's what's being done. So, but the medium is Pancharatra. So we don't make it up. But one could be spontaneous, because what's spontaneity? Not in what you're doing. It's the mood in which it's done. See, we have the idea, Western idea is that spontaneity means do whatever you like. No, it's what you're doing with, you know, that life or enthusiasm. Because you do whatever you like. How will anybody else relate? Unless it's common, how do you relate? So it has to be common ground. Right? So Varnashram is common ground. It's something that everybody can relate to if you actually understand Varnashram. If you don't, you think it's just a group of rules and regulations, you'll never understand. That's why it says scholarship's not enough. So the point is you're going to, if you have no material needs, then just chant Hare Krishna like Haridas Thakur. Then you don't need to do anything else. But if there's any other material needs, how are you going to fulfill them? Right? So you can use a Western model. And then, but the point is it the Western model or the Varnashram that's important? No, but is that actually what's important? No, it's the devotion in which it's used. So now, the point is, so that means if you don't know what's the Varnashram thing or not or that, you just have something, you engage it in Krishna's service, it's connected. So it is devotional service. But if you know the difference, the Varnashram is a higher element, can be applied, why would you want to use something inferior? If you're using something inferior, that's because of your own attachment, your own need. So, even that's there, great. But then you're using that for Krishna. But it's just a little bit more of yourself involved. It's more sakam than nishkam. Right? But still it's connected to Krishna. So that's why it's perfect. But one shouldn't make up philosophies that there's no need of using higher mediums. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? No, that's the point. Right? So, then when whatever it is that you use in Krishna's service, that becomes devotional service. So it's the devotional service that's important. That's what we have that faith in. Right? Firm conviction to execute the order of the Lord is known as faith. So you want to perform the devotional activities to please Krishna. That's what you're trying to do. Right? And then you'll use the best possible medium to do that. Does that make sense? You know, Mother Jashoda, she feeds Krishna milk, his personal milk. She has special cows. Right? Krishna likes the, you know, milk from the brown cows. Right? So she keeps special cows, so like that, and feeds them special grasses and herbs. So it will give a particular, you know, flavor and quality to the milk. Right? That's why Mother Jashoda was so worried when she was feeding Krishna and the pot of milk was boiling over, because this was the milk from that special cow. Right? So that's why she didn't want it to be lost. So she was doing it as service to Krishna. Right? So there's no fault there technically, but, you know, Krishna wanted to do some special pastime. So he got upset. You understand? So devotee always uses the best. So whatever you value, that's what you use. Right? So that's good enough. But you have to understand that works for you. It may not work for others. Does that make sense? Okay. A yogi should be firmly convinced that real happiness is transcendental to material, sensual experience. Unless he is convinced of that, he will surely be agitated and will fall down. Therefore, by strong faith and determination, he should give up material desires, born of mental speculation, and thus control the senses by the mind. Material desires born of mental speculation. Because you do something, right? Does it give you a great result? I mean, just being bluntly honest, the senses contact the sense objects. Do they always give a great result? No. Do they ever give a great result? Not necessarily, right? You know. So that's what Dhruva Maharaj talks about. It's called Shruti Sukhat. You've heard about pleasures, right? Shruti means hearing. Sukhat, happiness. So Shruti Sukhat means we've heard about it, but no one has ever had it. It's only talked about, you know. Does that make sense? You know? So, therefore, when that happens, what happens next? Okay, that didn't work. So then what happens next?
Let's try this.
You'll try, well, if you modify it a little, then it will work. And then when you, then so many obstacles and you finally get it, you know, and then that didn't work again, right? So something else, so you make up a new plan. And then you try and so many obstacles, so you have to make plans within plans to get to what you want, and then you finally, and it still doesn't work. So that's a material desires born of mental speculation or mental concoction. Right? Because in other words, we create that this should be good. Right? No? You know, something's starting to fall together. Wow, hey, this is going to be good. You know, but that means we can understand you're not doing it. And if you don't, or if you're not involved, it's not going to happen. And if you are involved and think you're doing it, then it's also not going to happen. So that means you have to be involved as an instrument. So that means someone else is controlling it. So it can't work according to your speculation. Understand? So that's why the shastras then define even what sense gratification. Because that's what works. But because it doesn't work, now why doesn't it work? We follow the Vedic things for what is sense gratification. And still we're not satisfied. So what should be the conclusion?
We'll never be satisfied.
We'll never be satisfied, right? You can't be satisfied. So that's the point. That's the first point. A yogi should be firmly convinced that real happiness is transcendental material sensual experience. Right? So in other words, one cannot be happy in the material world. Yayati, right? He exchanged his youth with his son for 1,000 years. And what he did for 1,000 years was, you know, to his best of ability, enjoyed sense gratification that was not contrary to religious principles for 1,000 years. And what was his conclusion? Anyone knows?
It's not attainable.
It's there is no, you can't be happy with material. So that means 1,000 years following all the religious principles as we defined before. Why I say that? Because you say, oh well, but there's no. They define what is actual going to get you results. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, he did whatever could be done that would give you the maximum result you can actually get within the material sphere. Then what was his conclusion? It's not worthwhile. So therefore, then he came back, gave the youth back to his son, and went to the forest. You understand? Because so the idea is if we follow speculative ways of sense gratification, right? Then, and it's not based on the religious principles, that means you don't know what you're dealing with. So if you're not intelligently dealing with the field, you won't get a very good result. Right? So then there's a problem there. Right? So then one's definitely going to speculate, well, if I did this and that, then it would be better, because that's all you have, is your mental concoction. Because there is no basis. But now, if you take the basis that the Vedic literatures define, you know, what is culture? What is the social interaction? Therefore, what is the maximum enjoyment a human being could get out of that environment. Now you're taking that, connecting it to Krishna. So one thing is there, is you're getting the best result from following the rules and regulations, and that result is being given to Krishna. So you're making the best offering that can be made in that situation, right? With the material ingredients. Okay? But now, since it's the best, then you can compare the material benefit gained from it and the spiritual taste. You understand? So what's going to be the conclusion? The spiritual taste is higher. So that means the best that there is, it still doesn't work. It still can't satisfy the soul. So that's where one gives up.
This is similar to what we were discussing yesterday with the demigods.
Yes, means it's just no matter what it is, that's the point, is that's as good as it gets. Basically, as far as material sense gratification goes, the demigods don't get much better. right? But even there, there's always something else, this and that, so the same problems are there. So it's not any different. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Because they don't have to follow the rules of religiosity here. So there are apsaras and other things like that. They're not connected with you. You know what I'm saying? So today they're with you, tomorrow they're with someone else. And then it's kind of like... And you can't say, this is not religious, because you're in the heavenly planets. That doesn't apply. You know what I'm saying? So it's a problem. The point is that material is dead matter. So then taking it... Okay, so we understand that point. Now, why is that working? Why is there even any concept of material sense enjoyment? Because Krishna enters it. So actually what you're dealing with is spiritual. You know, it's Brahman. But we mistake that it's the dead matter. So that's also the other aspect of mental speculation. Because we think it's the dead matter that is giving us this pleasure. When it's not, it's Krishna's potency. Right? So when you combine the knowledge with the proper practice, then you can see there's a limit to the material, and whatever there is, it's Krishna. And why would following, therefore, the proper rules and regulations in connection with engaging the senses make you more happy?
Because in connection with Krishna, he knows everything.
Yes, so it's in connection with Krishna, you're trying to please Krishna by doing that, so therefore Krishna being pleased, you're pleased. That's why you're more happy, because Krishna is more happy. Does that make sense? You know, so if we look at it from either side, socially or philosophically, you know, the mechanics of it is just not going to work. Living entity can't really enjoy here. So that's why then, but that doesn't mean one doesn't do something. One has one's conditioning, so one performs the activities that are proper for your position. Right? And according to that, then we engage that connected to Krishna. So our faith is that alone is all that's necessary. We don't have to follow all these rules and regulations because we need to follow them. It's a proper thing. It's a good thing. It's the righteous thing to do. No. Because actual righteousness is serving Krishna. No, not serving Krishna, no matter how nice it is, that's actually unrighteous. Right? Does that make sense? So so one is engaging everything in Krishna's service. That's the point. Does that make sense? You have something or no? Okay. You have something? Therefore, by strong faith and determination, one should give up all material desires born of mental speculation, and thus control the senses by the mind. Gradually, step by step, one should bring the mind back under the control of self. Now also, control the senses by the mind. How are we controlling the senses by the mind? By the intelligence, but it's still the mind is what engages the senses. So what has happened here? Right? The mind has a desire, it accepts and rejects. It has a desire. So, accordingly, it engages the senses. But here we're saying now the mind is controlling these senses. Yes, because the mind is controlled by the intelligence. In other words, we know the mind has accepted that material nature won't give me any satisfaction. So the mind is not interested to engage the senses in material sense gratification. Right? So that means the mind is controlled by the spiritual intelligence. Right, so then we're dealing with the spiritual mind, right? Because spiritual mind chooses Krishna, material mind doesn't. Right? Interesting thing, it just means Prabhupada's talking. I think it's in here. It's in one of these purports, just in this section, where Prabhupada's mentioning. He says the spiritual life is covered. Right, very interesting point. Because we just say there's material life, there's spiritual life. But material life means where spiritual life is covered by your conditioned nature. Right? Because otherwise, then if we don't understand that aspect, then we think that conditioned nature stands on its own. Right? Material existence stands on its own, but it doesn't. There's only spiritual nature for the soul. But it becomes covered, like the gold. If we drop it in the mud, it's not different gold. Is gold covered by mud? So in other words, the spiritual life is covered by the material consciousness. Right? So it's just a matter of purifying ourselves, removing that material consciousness, the spiritual automatically comes forth, right? It's not that you take the ring, it's dropped in the mud, then you get all the mud off, now you have to turn it into gold. No, it's automatic. That's why Prabhupada uses the term automatic, because the soul, that's his nature. So you remove Chaito Darpana Marjana. That's the meaning. Oh, he was describing it within connection with Patanjali. Right? Because there, then also he's defining that Patanjali, there's also an understanding that Patanjali and these other great personalities that wrote the six schools, they themselves are, they know the conclusion. But the conclusion's already been given by Vyasadeva, and there's these other people who are deviating from that conclusion. And so they write their literature, their philosophy in such a way they will catch those people, and they'll be engaged in the proper activities. Though, because they want a bad conclusion, they get one. But underlying, hidden, if you really study it properly, you'll understand that actually they're meaning something else. You know, so in other words, like we were discussing before with it, it's still the bhakti that makes it work, but they hide it in such a way that they don't see it. So it's not that Patanjali is an impersonalist. He's not. But he writes it in such a way that those who are will at least engage themselves, because pious people can surrender to Krishna, impious won't. So better they're pious than impious. Understand? That makes sense, right? So the philosophy that's being presented, how it is and how it's being understood and misapplied, that we don't have anything good to say about. But we don't speak badly about the authors of these different schools. Does that make sense? Verses 27 to 32. They describe the symptoms of the perfect yogi. The yogi whose mind is fixed on Krishna attains the highest perfection of transcendental happiness. He is freed from all reactions of previous activities. He is beyond the mode of passion, and he is qualitatively one with the Supreme, Brahma Bhutam. In the purport to verse 27, Srila Prabhupada explains, Brahma Bhuta is the state of being free from material contamination and situated in the transcendental service of the Lord. Right? That's different from liberation, because liberation simply means free from material contamination, and that's it. Brahma Bhuta means free from material contamination, or mukti, and situated in transcendental service of the Lord. That's Brahma Bhuta. Right? So when we say Brahma Bhuta and liberation, they mean the same thing, but liberation only means half of it. Means getting out of the material world. But Brahma Bhuta means getting out of the material world and that process to get into the spiritual world. Right. Mad bhaktim labhate param, Bhagavad Gita 18:54. One cannot remain in the quality of Brahman, the absolute, till one's mind is fixed on the lotus feet of the Lord. Right. Because, oh yeah, Savai Krishna Padara Vindayoho, Srimad Bhagavatam 9:4:18. To be always engaged in the transcendental loving and service, or to remain in Krishna consciousness, is to be factually liberated from the mode of passion and all material contamination. Right. Okay, you can't remain on the platform of Brahman unless one is engaged in the Lord's service. Why?
Because the nature of the
soul to be active. Yes, the nature of the soul to be active, so when you're active, if you think spiritual means only sought, then when there's a need for chit and ananda, then what happens? You come down to the material world, because that's all you know. The only activity you know is the material. You don't know of spiritual activity. Otherwise, you need activity, you go up. Right? Like the four Kumaras. They're on the Brahman platform. And they see that this activity is giving transcendental pleasure. So they know material energy can't do that. So that must mean it's coming from this interaction with the Lord. So devotional service generates transcendental pleasure. Right? So they cannot remain like that. And so, and why here Prabhupada is always mentioning here just freed from the mode of passion.
Passion would be this urge to really enjoy this.
Yes, that's the point. Is that it's that sense of enjoyment, sense of possession, all that kind of elements. That's what's going to be there. You know, so through the passion, then you want to control and enjoy. You know what I'm saying? You know, then that will be controlled by so many qualities. You have to therefore be in the mode of goodness, be in the present to actually interact in the right way. Like that, then you obtain it, that's also the mode of goodness. But then the problem is then that moves back into ignorance because that becomes a false identity. Right? And then from there you become inspired, so there's more, you know, as the mode of passion creates that inspiration for more, trying to enjoy the false identification. Like that. So the passion will be the working principle. So if you remove that, then you get to, you know, if you remove that, then you can only remove that if there's no ignorance. Right? Because passion is based on ignorance. Right? So Abhideya is based on sambandha. So sambandha in the material world is ignorance. So if you remove passion, it means you've removed the ignorance. Right? It means if it's factual. Because the impersonalists try to do that and remove the passion, but there's the ignorance, they don't know who they actually are. So then what will happen? What will ignorance generate? Sambandha will generate Prayojana Abhideya. So then the other modes come up. So to remove that means you have to change the identity. So identity is I'm servant of Krishna. So then it's no longer the mode of ignorance. Now you're dealing with the Sandini potency. You're dealing with Sat, eternality. So then that will generate, you know, and then the Naishkarmi that's already been described is then your goals are all please Krishna. So then your Abhideya will be under what? Will it be under passion? No, it'll be under the chit potency. So it'll be spiritual. Does that make sense? You see the mechanics there. Such a yogi is self-controlled and constantly engages in yoga practice. He achieves the highest happiness in loving service to Krishna. Right? So it's in loving service to Krishna. So why is it the highest happiness? Krishna is pleased, right? So, is Krishna pleased as Atmarama? Yes. But is he more pleased interacting with the devotees? Right. So, Brahman is the Atmarama platform. So, therefore, even though there's so much happiness there, it doesn't compare with the happiness of the interaction with Krishna and the devotees. Right? So that's why it gives the highest happiness. So they taste that, they see that in interaction, in service, that gives a higher pleasure than simply being on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Right? Because that neutrality state, okay, it gives some happiness, but there's beyond. That's why Rupa Goswami keeps mentioning this. Right? So in other words, this idea of, means getting out of the material world is compared an ocean to a drop, but then that ocean is reduced to a drop compared to an unlimited ocean. You understand? So, therefore, is even though it's so great, the other one's even greater. Right? And it's just, does that make sense? So that's always brought up, because that way we don't get satisfied to just stop at Brahma-Bhuta. Yes.
Is Brahma-Bhuta neutral if we are actually engaged already in
service? The point is it's in practice it's not technically neutral. Because Brahma-Bhuta here then would mean you're on the liberated platform. At which stage in the process of the development of bhakti is one on the liberated platform? Bhava, right? So bhava means you're in your spiritual form. You know, within the spiritual environment, with all, you know, all the other devotees in their spiritual form. So, it's not technically neutral, but at the same time as attraction to Krishna is dynamic. You have to cultivate it. So you have to cultivate that through cultivating association with the advanced devotees. You understand? So if you're just happy doing whatever you do in Vrindavan, you know, making your cow dung patties and cooking a few chapatis and all this, then that's not going to be very dynamic. How is that going to develop that love for Krishna? Means bhava is the stage of, on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, moving from that neutral state up to prema. But the point is you have to want to do it. Basically speaking, someone who has will. But still, it has to be pointed out that you can be distracted. You know what I'm saying? What means, let us say you're in your house, okay? And a few things, minor things go wrong. Right? What's the tendency? To fix them. Okay. But let's say, does that have any effect on your consciousness of Krishna? Means something goes wrong in your house. Would it become an impetus for remembering Krishna? No. What if it's a big thing? Then more. Okay? Right? In other words, you're saying if you can deal with it, why remember Krishna? If you can't deal with it, then you remember Krishna. Okay, so this is a practical, very straightforward. You can be very consistent in this, you know, like that. Okay. So let us, you know, having redefined here. So if things really go wrong in your house, you remember Krishna. But if they don't go wrong in your house, you may not remember Krishna. Okay. So do things go wrong in the spiritual energy? No. So if you're in your spiritual body, in a spiritual house, doing your activities around the house, nothing's going to go wrong. What's going to make you remember Krishna? You understand? So you have to have that determination that that's what you want. And if that is what you want, then you get the association of the eternal associates of the Lord who have that love for Krishna that you want. They have prema. Right? So by their association, then seeing their service and their mood, then you'll develop prema. That's why it's called bhava sadhana. Right? So bhava bhakti, it's still a sadhana. So you adjust with your position in the spiritual world. You know, means who you are, your position. But the point is until you're fully absorbed in Krishna. Right? So when it says you have to give up everything, it means that. Right? It means here, you're having to give up, you know, house and clothes and everything else that's made out of dead matter. Right? And always gives trouble. Right? And we're so attached and that's so difficult. So what about giving up stuff that's nice and doesn't give any trouble? Yeah, so that's the point. Is that if you're not willing to give it up here, you're not going to give it up there. But the point is, unless you're giving it up here, you're not going to get there. So since you already practiced at it here, you'll continue that practice there. That's the point of Brahma-Bhuta. It just keeps going through. Because your goal is Krishna, not bhava. Right? So that experience of bhava, that is what the impersonalists are looking for. But they don't know, they don't understand the thing in relation to Krishna. So they don't get that. So it's only mukti. It's just simply getting out of the material world. But you've got getting out of the material world and being in the spiritual world. So it's something more. But that's still shanta. You're simply appreciating Krishna and the spiritual nature. That's shanta. But it has to become dynamic. Right? Only if it's dynamic, then you'll serve. Sorry? Get to which platform? No. What we're saying is that the liberated platform, that's the same, but the difference is that's their goal. But for the devotees, so they'll stop there. But the devotees, prema is the goal. So then bhava is simply a place in between. It's a medium. Right? So that's why one would keep going. Because otherwise one might doubt why would you keep going. But at the same time, that's why the philosophy is meaning all these things. Because it has this double meaning. You have to give up everything here. You have to give it up there. Right? You know, was it, you know, everything just so simple, right? The means, what do you call it? The cowherd girls there and everything, then it's, you know, it's a cakewalk, just, you know, going and being with Krishna and everything like that, right? No, they have to, they still have to give up their social positions and all those different things. You understand? So that's just the nature of the relationship, nature of the soul. Right? That's why they're greater. Vaikuntha, you don't have to give up your social position. Right? But they're the greatest because they're willing to give up that. It means you have social position here. Okay, it's there, it's temporary. There, it's eternal. So you're giving that up eternally. That's what makes them the greatest. You understand? So you're not being asked to do anything here that they don't do there. So that's why he's saying all these things, oh, it's just, you know, the Vedic thing is just some mundane thing. You know, what's the difference between the, you know, the Vedic and, you know, it's a mundane thing in America and, you know, that's mundane, so what's the difference? You know, that's cheating. You know, because one's an actual reflection and one's, you know, a perverted reflection. One's a perversion of that perverted reflection. You know what I'm saying? You know, you look in the mirror and you see your regular face. Then that's what do you call it? That's a perverted reflection because it's not actually, it's you, but at the same time it's not. Now, when you look in the mirror in the morning, now that's a perversion of a perversion. You understand? So you can't compare the two. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. That's the false statement, is that they're not, because one is given by the Lord, you know, and you know, the American Constitution wasn't necessarily like that. Yeah, that's there. Is it? In God we trust, all others have to pay cash. So, like that. So.
Or as you mentioned, the devotee would remove the passion to go to that stage.
Yeah.
And for that devotee, the inspiration is coming from what element?
It become coming from the opportunities to please Krishna. Because the thing is, sacrifice means the willingness to give up one's own pleasure for someone else's, to work for someone else's pleasure. So by practicing that, one sees that there's a higher pleasure in that than doing it yourself. You know what I'm saying? You know? So that's, one sees opportunities to serve Krishna. So that's the thing, is you have to be clever and smart, and so you see the opportunities. Right? Because even in the spiritual environment, everybody wants to serve Krishna, so then you see an opportunity. Right? The standard service that you're going to do, but there's always these special opportunities. That's what makes the variety. Does that make sense? Such a yogi. Did we read this? And we do read the comment? I mean the purport? No. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to verse 28. Self-realization means knowing one's constitutional position in relationship to the Supreme. Individual soul is part and parcel of the Supreme, and his position is to render transcendental service to the Lord. This transcendental contact with the Supreme is called Brahma Samsparsha. I think it's because sparsha means to touch. So Samsparsha means, you know, full or complete touch, yes. The Baba level. You can stay, but eventually you won't. But the problem is you can get stuck for hundreds of lifetimes. You know what I'm saying? Because everybody there, because they're working within the material time, no, it's eternal, but the appearance of it, then that pastime will wind up and move on. And then you'll have to appear in another one. So Haridas Thakur says you can get stuck in like that for hundreds. You know, if you think you're special, you're the devotee, you're great, you know, you're... Does that make sense? It's by association. So when you somehow or another, by the Lord's grace, take up the association of the devotees, then you'll move beyond that. But if you think you're the devotee, then you don't think you need the association of the Lord's devotees. Not that you fall down, you get stuck. You know what I'm saying? It's not permanent. One will continue, but why waste? Everybody here will go up afterwards also. We're still making that endeavor. You know, because it's through endeavor that you get there. It means you can also fall back from there. Like that. So there's examples of that also. You know, if you become distracted by the material. Because if you're not attracted to Krishna, you'll be attracted to the material energy. So you make the same idiot mistake you made in the first place. Okay? But generally speaking, because of the engagement in devotional service, that won't happen. Right? Because you've been in the material world, so you're not about to do that again. But the problem is unless you take that dynamic interest in pleasing Krishna, you may not move forward as quickly as you could. Right? Just like, give an example. When Krishna plays the flute on the night of the Maharas, right, the gopis go. No? Do all the gopis go?
No.
Why not?
Some of them hesitate.
They hesitate, and why do they hesitate? Yes. And so what happens to them? They get stuck, right? Their husbands and brothers and fathers, and whatever it is, whoever it is, they catch them and lock them in their room. So why didn't they go? Because there's still some tinge of the material, right? Because it's just like, let's say you take a box of hing, right? And you open the top. What does it smell like? Hing. Okay. What if we dump out all the hing and wash the box really nicely? What does it smell like?
Hing.
So, but is there any hing? No, there's no hing. So that's the position. There is no material contamination, but there's still a fragrance. So you have to get rid of that fragrance. Right? So that's the point. So those gopis aren't the ones that have taken up the association of the Nitya Siddhas. Right? They weren't that serious. They were comfortable in the family life. Taking care of the, you know, cooking and taking care of the kids and the family members. Right? Because they're all made out of Sundini potency. So, I mean, it's not bad. You know, they're not made out of, you know, how you say, blood, stool, urine, pus and all that. You know, they're made out of spiritual energy. So, it's not bad. But they weren't as focused on Krishna as they should have been. But you can see that they wanted to go, so they were focused on Krishna, but not as much as it needed. So they hadn't come to the point of samadhi. So that's what we're talking about here. Yoga Rudra is coming to the point of samadhi. So they hadn't. So there's meditation. Right? But, you know, your smriti is, you remember sometimes, anusmriti a little bit more. But it's not samadhi. Does that make sense? So then, because of being stopped, then they think of Krishna. You know, they come to that platform of samadhi. By that, it burns up whatever is left of the pious and impious. As I mentioned, it's pious also, so it's not that. Pious also keeps you back. Right? Then it's all burnt up. So some of them, if it happened instantaneously, then Yogamaya arranges, like the other gopis, that they can get away. And some that didn't, it took a little longer, then, you know, it's a little bit late for that round. So they get stuck there, but then the next time there's a rasa dance, they can go. Does that make sense? So it's the same process, just that you're in the spiritual form. So it's like, it's not that way, spiritual form, that's it. That's why we call them sahajiyas, because they think you get the spiritual form and this and that, and then it's done. No, prema, then you can start to say. You could say it's done, but it's not. You know, so bhava's never done. You understand?
It's being done.
It's being done. Yes, it's getting, it's dynamically getting done. Right? Because technically speaking, now Bhava means Brahma Bhuta means Anartha Nivriti. That's real Anartha Nivriti. Right? Then one gets accustomed, one gets that taste, one gets that attachment. That attachment then is Purva Rag, it's complete attachment. Before that was attachment, but it's not complete. So when we say Asakti, that means attachment. So that brings you to Bhava, but it's not the attachment in Bhava what they're talking about. You know, that is Purva Rag, complete attachment. Right? And so that then takes you on. So the next stage where you associate with Krishna, that takes you into prema. Does this make sense? So one should always remember that anartha nivriti, then it's prominent in the madhyam stage. Right? So the anarthas aren't the prominent thing. The devotion, the being situated, the taste or attachment, these are what's prominent. But still something's there. But that has to be completely removed. So when it comes to bhava, then all the reactions are removed, but there's still that slight subtlety of the flavor within the consciousness. So that has to be removed, and that's... Does that make sense? So it's not, one's not being asked to do anything different than they do in the spiritual world, but you're only being asked to do it on the level that you're doing it here. Right? Does that make sense? Like, let us say, if there is a professor in English lit, right? Is he dealing with the alphabet?
Yes.
Yes. Now, let's say you have a kid in nursery school, and they're learning to write A, B, C. Are they working with the alphabet? So, you're not asking them to do anything different, right? One writes the alphabet, the other writes the alphabet. So, what you're dealing with is no different, but it's according to your level. You understand? So the devotional process doesn't change, right? It's just according to your level than what you can do. But the process is the same. Right? That makes sense? Are we clear on why the soul is to render devotion, render service? Right? There's no doubts on that. Right? Understand? Means the point is that if you have the subject and the object, means Krishna and Radharani, there's going to be an activity connecting them. Right? So if you're involved in that activity, because you're not Radha or Krishna, right, that's not going to happen, right? Right down, okay, check down. Okay. So that's not going to happen, right? So that means we can be involved in the activity between them. And so since we're not the doer, Krishna's the doer, right? And we're not the, what do you call it, the doee, right? Then that means we can be assistant in the activity. That's the position of the soul, right? Because it's natural. Tatastha means that you can see the two sides. So that means you can see both at once. And therefore see that the activity goes nicely. Does that make sense? But one, you know, at this stage is no longer in the tatastha position, because it's not tatastha between material world and spiritual world, but now it's between, you know, the male and female, seeing that that works together. Does that make sense? So that is the position of the living entity. So it works. So one doesn't have to think, well, why? Why are we, you know, why are we made like that? No, that's just the way it is. Right. Verse 27 describes a yogi who realized that he is qualitatively one with Brahman. Verse 28 speaks about going beyond Brahman and realizing the Supersoul. Right? So in other words, you're understanding you're Brahman, and then there's the Supreme Brahman, and you have a relationship with him. Right? Understanding that Krishna and the Supreme Soul are one, ekatvam, a yogi can progress towards personal relationships with the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, you're going from Brahman to Paramatma. Understand that Paramatma and Krishna are non-different. So therefore, you can move on to Krishna. Go to Bhagavan. So that's the natural, you know, how you say?
Progression.
Yeah, that's good. progression. Yes.
Right. So this is indicate that it is like a change of consciousness. Understand Brahman.
Yeah. I mean, let's say it's a development of consciousness, because Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan are all Brahman. But just there's a superiority of Brahman, because in one you have the position, means the existence. The other you have knowledge and some activity, some interaction of, you know, you're doing things that's by Paramatma, he's controlling. But there's still not that Ananda, which is the result. So you got Sat Chit Ananda. Right? So to have Ananda means the Sat and Chit have to both be there. Right? For Chit to be there must be Sat. Right? But for Sat to be there, you only need Sat. So that's basically, you're only understanding the Sat aspect in Brahman. Sat and Chit with Paramatma, and Sat Chit Ananda with Bhagavan. So, in other words, the Brahman is always there. Like Sat is always there. But it's now you're adding into that knowledge and activities, and then that Ananda that comes from that. Right? Because that means it's based on the relationships. Right? Because in other words, the super means there's Brahman, so everything's Brahman. Then there's Parabrahman is managing this Brahman, so that's the super soul. But the point is then he's beyond that, where he's not managing this inferior Brahman, but he's involved in the superior Brahman in interacting with the devotees in loving exchange. So that's much greater than just he's God and controlling this place. Does that make sense? So then the yogi then could transfer himself through these levels, because otherwise one would say, oh, well, you get to that and then you might get stuck. That's one is why all these things of saying what's beyond it, one doesn't stop here, one goes beyond, and how, you know, the devotee thinks liberation is useless. So in other words, just the aspect, it means one's in the spiritual world, one's not thinking, wow, it's so great to be out of the material world. Nobody cares about that. It's the opportunity to serve Krishna, that's what's special. Right. So, therefore, then those things are being, so both the not being distracted by the material environment, you know, or lack of it, and then being attracted to serving Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's always the two. Don't always remember Krishna, never forget. Yes.
And it's mean when we reach the spiritual platform, doing the spiritual platform also different level of consciousness.
So, not specifically, because Anandamaya is the level of consciousness. It's just it's a detail within that. You know, anamoya is just the senses, pranamoya, extended sense ground, manamoya then religious principles and the basically theoretical intellectual, then the actual realized intellectual, vijnanamoya, anandamoya, means on the transcendental platform. You know, so those who get to this platform of realizing the super soul, you know, or the Brahma bodies who actually get there, that's anandamaya also. But then there's the dynamic anandamaya. That's greater. But it's still, you know, still, as we said, you're adding on to already there. Because Anandamaya means you're on the transcendental platform. So then within that, then there's all the various relationships. So each one gives a higher. So that's why then when you come to Prema. So Brahma-Bhuta is the first stage in 10. Right? But the first stage, the bud, can happen or not. So but once it's open, then that's Prema. So that's the second level. Mahabhav is the eighth. Right? So there's a few in between. But we don't talk about it much because there's no use in talking about it. You get yourself to prema, everything else is going to happen, right, according to your relationship. Because anyway, the physical body can't handle beyond prema. You can only manifest up to prema within the material body. Right? The material body is not resilient enough to handle beyond that. You know, we if one sense, you know, the happiness of one sense engaged the way we would, you know, ideally like it engaged, it makes us so happy we're bouncing off the walls. Now what happens if all five are working at once? Yeah, we just basically like that, yeah, explode. Because they're all going in different directions, you know. So you have one, so you're moving in the same way, you know. But here you have five moving in different directions, so it just won't work.
Transform like
Yeah, yeah. But that's a spiritual form, so therefore, you know, he ends up, you know, his arms all the way out, like he's been stretched, or they all go back inside his body, you know, so, like that. So, you need a spiritual body for that kind of stuff. So that's why it's not talked about so much. Because then also we might make the mistake that it's mundane. Because then the detail, up to prema, then that's to us seems very, is, you know, has that lofty enough element. But then beyond that, then it appears like the material. Well, the material is just a reflection of that. But we make the mistake, so it's not talked about as much. Does that make sense? The vision of the perfect yogi has two aspects. He sees Krishna in all beings, and he sees every being in Krishna. The yogi sees Krishna in everything, but he does not think that everything has become Krishna. The yogi rather sees the Lord in the heart of every living entity. Right? Because Krishna is everything, but at the same time he's separate. You have to be able to deal with both of those at once. So he's in every living entity, so that's why everything is working. You know, he's in every atom, between every atom. The same time as everybody is in him. You know, it's his pastime, it's his activities. Like that. You know, so. The advanced yogi sees also that all living beings are energy of the Lord and are situated in the energy of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada explains. Outwardly also, every living being is situated in the energy of the Lord, as will be explained in the 7th chapter. The Lord has primarily two energies, right? So here we're 6th chapter, now Prabhupada's talking about 7th. Because 7th, then he says, that will define devotional service. So the 7th chapter, because we've done karma, you know, then jnana, karma and jnana mixed, now we're adding jnana to it, then the 7th will give bhakti. The Lord has primarily two energies, the spiritual or superior and material or inferior. The living entity, although part of the superior energy, is conditioned by the inferior energy. The Lord is always in the Lord's energy. Every living entity is situated in him in one way or another. So this is why he's superior energy, but he is conditioned by the inferior. So that means he doesn't become, right? The soul doesn't become dead matter. That's a mistake of the material consciousness. You think that the soul comes from matter, life comes from matter. So both your materialist and your intellectual, your pessimists, your intellectuals, they both think the same thing. It's come from dead matter. No, the soul is beyond. It becomes covered. So he's always in the Lord's energy. He's never different from that. So he's either in the spiritual or in the material. Right? The self, so that means everybody's in Krishna, right? They're in his energies. The self-realized yogi sees the Lord in the heart of everyone and sees that everyone is situated in the Lord. Thus he sees Krishna everywhere because he understands that all living beings are Krishna's eternal servants and everything is Krishna's energy, right? So everything's Krishna's energy, so it's in Krishna and everybody is servant of Krishna. Right, so Krishna is within them. For such a person, Krishna is never lost, and he is never lost to Krishna. Right. So here is that he's there as Paramatma. Now whether the person is thinking of Krishna or not, Paramatma is there. So Krishna is there, so you can deal properly with every living entity. In the spiritual world, every living entity is always thinking of Krishna. That means Krishna is in their heart. Right? But by their thinking of him, he's there. The material world, no one thinks of him, so therefore he has to go there himself. You know, like that. It's hard to get, you know, good hired help these days, right? You gotta do it yourself, right? Does that make sense? So the living entity can't live separately from the Lord. He can't function. But in illusion, he thinks he can, but the Lord still has to be there. Right? So in any case, one appreciates how the Lord is in everyone's heart. You know, in the spiritual world, it's about how they have great devotion, and therefore Krishna is in their heart. Right? And here, whether they have the devotion, if they have that, you have super soul and devotion, hey, okay, that's better. But if not, then every living entity, supersoul, is there. So a person in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada comments in the purport of verse 30, a person in Krishna consciousness certainly sees Lord Krishna everywhere, and he sees everything in Krishna. Such a person may appear to see all separate manifestations of the material energy, but in each and every instance he is conscious of Krishna. So he sees all the separate manifestations, but he understands how Krishna is connected with it, by one way or another, right? Through Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan, right? In some way he sees that. Knowing that everything is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. Nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the development of love of Krishna, a position transcendental even to material liberation. So just because you understand that, so that love is beyond that, because you can appreciate that, you could intellectually appreciate that he is beyond everything and this and that, but having a relationship is beyond that, because then that invokes the natural, sentiments of the living entity. Otherwise, it's just intellectual. At this stage of Krishna consciousness, so here we see material liberation. Right? Generally, you don't see that. You just see liberation. But here, or a liberation from material existence. Here's material liberation. That means liberation that's not in connection with Krishna. Right? It's not based on a relationship with Krishna. That's material liberation. So being material, it's temporary. Right? It won't last. At this stage of Krishna consciousness, beyond self-realization, the devotee becomes one with Krishna in the sense that Krishna becomes everything for the devotee, and the devotee becomes full in loving Krishna. Right? So that's your Brahma Samsparsha. Right? So he's completely, absorbed. Okay. So here we see is that these elements that are there in all these paths are there all the way through. Right? And so this Krishna consciousness goes beyond self-realization, so he knows who he is. But now, knowing who you are one thing, but then doing something about it, that's the devotion. Right? Because you know that you're servant of Krishna. You know you're not the body. Right? You know you're Brahman. But then going beyond that, you know you serve Krishna and please Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So in that stage, then one becomes one with Krishna in the sense Krishna becomes everything for the devotee. And the devotee becomes full in loving Krishna. So there's a oneness there because the mood matches. So that oneness, that is the lowest, right? Means in other words, like when Krishna lists the possibilities within the spiritual and material sphere, then he comes down from, directly surrendering immediately, then Pancharatra, then working for Krishna and Naishkarmiya, then Sakam, then just being a pious materialist, following the Vedas and like that. Then he mentions, then he can be a personalist. Right? That's the bottom of the barrel, right? So why would it be the bottom? It's neutral? Okay, it means you don't accept the Lord's existence. But what's in relationship to this point being made? What happens to things that are the highest in the spiritual world? Where do they end up here? The lowest. So in other words, that concept of oneness with Krishna, where Krishna is not involved, that's the lowest. But that oneness with Krishna, where it's a relationship with Krishna, so the oneness is not in form, but in mood. That's the highest. Because the point is, can the jiva become one with Brahman? No, so the form will stay like that. But what they've done is they've merged their consciousness into that. So that makes the lowest. Because they'll give the example, just like a green bird in a green tree. But there's still a green bird in the green tree. It all looks green, yes, but it's all green. But it's still, there's two there. So that's not going to go away. So what's wrong is that their consciousness is merged into this oneness where they think they're God. And there's no loving relationship. Right? So they don't actually understand who they are, who God is. So the self-realization is very meager.
And the spiritual, you said, the same concept is the highest.
Yes.
Except because the devotee in that state is completely merged in Krishna in the sense that Krishna is everything, but there's a relationship.
Yes. So it's here. It's different. It means this is the perversion.
Okay.
That's the real thing. It means at this stage of Krishna consciousness, beyond self-realization, that means beyond the material liberation, the devotee becomes one with Krishna in the sense that Krishna becomes everything for the devotee, and the devotee becomes full in loving Krishna. So there's a non-difference because all you think about is Krishna, so you can't separate Krishna from anything you do or think. So there's a oneness. Right? But it's not that physically there is a oneness. No, that there's a oneness because the only thing you think about and do is connected to Krishna. And Krishna is everything to you, so that's all you ever think about. Right? An intimate relationship between the Lord and the devotee then exists. Right? Then it's intimate. So that means also that the devotee, the Lord, is always thinking about. Right? Only on the basis of such an intimate relationship is it possible to develop universal, all-encompassing love for all creatures. Right. Srila Prabhupada explains in Bhagavad Gita Lecture, LA, 1969. Okay, just on that thing. So we see this as bringing it up from this yoga process, from sitting on this battlefield, all the way to this intimate relationship with the Supreme Lord. Right? All within these first six chapters. Right? So this is what's special. So when we say Bhagavad Gita is the basis, it doesn't mean that it's like, handwriting in nursery school. We means that this is what it's all based on. Now it's, further, details and enhancement of this. But this is that's why, the study of these bhakti shastras is not just some basic thing, like that. Does that make sense? It's a matter of this is something serious. Okay, so in the LA, Bhagavad Gita lecture in LA. Yes, this consciousness, this studying of the tree as Krishna's energy, as part and parcel of Krishna, will help you to enhance your love for Krishna, just like you love your child. And he is not with you. You find his shoes and think, oh, these are the shoes of my child. But you do not love the shoe, you love the child. Similarly, as soon as you perceive the energy of Krishna manifested in a different way, you love that entity because you love Krishna. Therefore, if you love Krishna, then your all-embracing love is apparent. Otherwise, it is useless, and you do not have love. If you don't love Krishna, then you reason, here is my American brother, here is the American and the American cow is my food. Krishna's problem is pretty. But your reasoning is false. Both are living creations. Both are part and parcels of Krishna. But your reasoning is false. Both are living creations. Both are parts and parcels of Krishna. You cannot say you love one and yet you will eat the other. This is not an all-embracing love. On the other hand, a Krishna-conscious person sees a cow or a dog and knows they are part and parcel of Krishna, even though they have a different body. That does not mean that they are not his brother. So how can he kill his brother? We love Krishna, so we will love all his creations without exception. There cannot be any love without Krishna consciousness. Right? So when you see Krishna's potency, then you can appreciate Krishna in everything. Right? So that's then your affection for everything because it's connected to Krishna. Right? It doesn't come just to so much sentiment. That's quite limited. As you see, even the ones with the greatest amount, it's limited. You know what I'm saying? Even though so much is there, but it's still limited. Does that make sense? The yogi who always sees the Lord as Paramatma in his heart turns into a pure devotee and cannot bear to live for a moment without seeing the Lord within himself. Such a yogi who engages in the service of the Supersoul, understanding that Krishna and the Supersoul are one, remains always in Krishna consciousness. in all circumstances. Perfect yogi is he who sees that in both their happiness and their distress, all beings are originally equal. Verse 32. In other words, the yogi sees that what is good for himself and what is bad for himself is equally applicable for all other living beings. Therefore, he desires happiness for all others and does not desire suffering for anyone. Like you can see in the Vrindavan pastimes, then this element is that the mothers of the sons who are married to the gopis, because the gopis aren't interested in interacting with them, right? So Madhu Mangal comes, and so then they ask Madhu Mangal, you know, you're a Brahmin, you know, can you give us some advice? And so they ask him, it says, our daughters-in-laws are not interested in their husbands, their sons. So, you know, this situation, you know, we wouldn't wish on even our enemies. You know, they're saying we wouldn't want to see anybody suffer by, you know, the family life is not going nicely. You know, even our enemies, we wouldn't wish this. So how can we resolve this? Right? And so then, you know, Madhu Mangal, you know, becomes very serious and all that, and then says, it's because, you know, your daughters have to do this particular worship. You know, you always keep them, you never let them go out, so you have to let them go out and do this worship, I think, of the sun god or something like that. No, actually, said of, yeah, he used another name of Cupid, like that. So they have to go out in the forest and do this worship, you know. And so then they think, okay, so they go to the daughters-in-law and tell them, you have to go out there and worship this person, you know, in the forest during the daytime, right? And so they understand it means, you know, this means Krishna, but, you know, the mother-in-law doesn't. So the gopis are very happy. So what we're saying, what point is here, is that therefore he desires happiness for all others, does not desire suffering for anyone. So it's just, they're seeing is that their son is suffering, but they don't want, you know, the daughter-in-law to suffer or someone else to suffer. They don't want anyone to suffer. You understand? Because they see everything in relationship to Krishna. At least up to a point here. You know, because the conjugal relationship doesn't, you know, they wouldn't have wouldn't have a problem if Krishna married some gopi, then they'd be happy. You know, but because they're in parental rasa, they don't think that their daughter-in-law is off with Krishna, you know, so, like that. This is the most important type of equal vision, and a yogi who has attained it is considered the best of all. Out of compassion, right, you understand, means there's an equality of just seeing the energies, right? But then you're seeing it in relationship that they are connected to Krishna, right? So that'll be better. Out of compassion, such a yogi preaches the message of God for the benefit of all conditioned souls, right? Because their suffering is due to not understanding, so they preach, right? Because otherwise, technically, to preach would be considered illusory. If you're in any kind of monist, you know, or voidist, then preaching is actually bogus. Because what's the meaning of teacher and taught? Or the process of teaching?
There's something substantial to be learned.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying with us, but I'm just saying with them, what would be? Because the teacher is illusory. The concept of duality is illusory, so there is no teacher and taught. And there is no activity, so there's no teaching. So if you ever find a Mayavadi or a Buddhist teaching, that's against their philosophy. You know what to do. You know, but they do it. They're in Maya, right? Maya for a cause. Right? Okay. Srila Prabhupada describes the stage in the purport to verse 32. In other words, a devotee of the Lord always looks to the welfare of all living entities, and in this way, he is factually the friend of everyone. He is the best yogi because he does not desire perfection in yoga for his personal benefit, but he tries for others also. He does not envy his fellow living entities. Here is a contrast between a pure devotee of the Lord and a yogi interested only in his personal elevation. The yogi who has withdrawn to a secluded place in order to meditate perfectly may not be as perfect as the devotee who is trying his best to turn every man towards Krishna consciousness. Right? So self-realization means you are benefited, but self-realization, if you realize who you are as self, means you're a servant. So therefore, you're always trying to see that you're assisting in others being with Krishna. Right? That's what jivas do. Right? That's what the Lord's energy does. So then that would mean that those who are not in Krishna consciousness, or those who have come to Krishna consciousness, you'd be helping them, cultivating. So that's the preaching attitude actually comes from the devotee. Because the Lord will preach if someone wants to hear. If they don't, they can't. Advaitacharya, that's his complaint. You know, he's there, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, so what's the problem? But nobody's surrendering, so he can't reciprocate. So therefore, you can only be liberated from material existence by Vishnu Tattva. Right? At the same time, Vishnu Tattva only responds to your surrender. So only Lord Chaitanya, who's Krishna in the mood of the devotee, will preach. Even though nobody wants to hear. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the... In the beginning of this chapter, Krishna explained that the Ashtanga yogi should practice Nishkam Karma Yoga until he attains the advanced level of a Yoga Arudha. At this stage, he can give up work and engage solely in yoga practice. In the above section, verses 10 to 32, the Lord described the practice of Ashtanga Yoga in detail. A yogi should leave home and go to a secluded place, stay there alone and engage in severe austerities and rigorous meditation. After a long practice, he can realize the super soul and achieve the same liberation in the supreme described in chapter 5. After hearing about these difficult practices, Arjuna declares himself unfit for Ashtanga Yoga. So Krishna, having summarized this all very nicely, then he has to basically say, well, this is not for me. Well, let's try something else here.
Very nice.
Yeah. Very nice, but that's not going to work. Okay, anything else? Yes.
In the Gita, there are different chapters and different sections. So, who made this chapter and who made that section?
Who made the chapters and sections? That would be Vyasadeva himself. Yeah, he would write. He would put them. In other words, Krishna is speaking in this way, and so then according to the topic, then Vyasadeva will make it into the chapters. Because the idea of when you compile something, then the idea is to make it more clear for whoever is the audience. So in making these chapters, then you understand this topic matter goes together. Right? And then there'll be some kind of a Sunday between the two. Does that make sense? So, like that. Is that okay?
Where I think Gita, for example, there are the verses and there are the chapters. So he decided to put by chapter?
Yes.
And after by section?
Yeah, that'll come naturally because, in other words, the different sections are grouped together by the chapter. You know, does that make sense?
Yes, but it is when Krishna was speaking with Arjuna, it was the flow of conversation.
It's a flow, but still you're moving through what is technically called adhikaranas. It means you're making a point. So an adhikarana will be a section, right? And within the adhikarana, then you're going to have, so it means, in other words, there's a thesis, there's a point being made. And so then that will have the thesis itself, its explanations, its examples, its synthesis, its conclusion. And then in that conclusion, it'll connect to the next adhikarana. So just like in the first chapter, first pada, yeah. In Vedanta Sutra, there's four chapters. four adhyayas. Each chapter has four padas. But within each pada, there'll be so many adhikaranas. Does that make sense? So like that. So the adhikaranas connect to each other, and then there's a grouping of between the adhikaranas in one chapter, then that will connect to the next chapter. And then those, does that make sense? Or next padas in this case. And then those padas, then those will be four padas. There's some differences there, but they all are together as one chapter. Right? Does that make sense? So four chapters, 16 padas, and each pada has breakdowns. Right, does that make sense? So that's just the way the literatures are. So then they're divided up this way.
And he gives the title for the chapter?
Sorry?
And he gives the title for the chapter?
Yeah, he gives so that we understand. You know, it's like a heading. Like you'll see in the commentaries by the Acharyas, then they even give even like all different things and headings and stuff themselves. One of the Acharyas, I think, he connects each verse, takes each verse and then says, okay, this is doing this, that one's doing that, and this is the connection. Then you do the next verse, then this and this and this, and just like that. Is that Ramanuja? Okay, so one of them does this. You know, so it's so that we can study it, because the point is if we're so intelligent just to hear it and we'd figure it out, then what's the need of writing it down? Right, but since it has to be written down, that generally means then the intelligence is not so great. So therefore, these headings are put so that we. Right, does that make sense? You know, just like the first chapter, that's Vishada Yoga. So then that means means the anxiety that is there. But we see two kinds of anxiety: Arjuna, which is basically seemingly a pious anxiety, and Duryodhana, which is a, you know, totally, you know, not so pious anxiety. Though he's basing on Shastra, but he's using Niti, and Arjuna is using Dharma. You know, like that. But the point is both are having a problem. So the solution is Krishna consciousness. Right? So that, therefore, to start Krishna consciousness, you have to know who you are. If you don't know who you are, how you understand anything else? So therefore, Krishna starts with the nature of the soul. So then that defines everything that will be defined basically in the Gita. So he's given an overview of the whole thing. Now, Arjuna could have understood from that. You know, that would be quite Upanishadic, right? But the problem is that people haven't understood from the Upanishads. So now, he is therefore explaining what's there in the Upanishads. So then the third chapter will explain those aspects of the second chapter, fourth. So all the rest of the chapters will explain what he's already said in the second. Does that make sense? Right, yes. It destroys austerity. How does it austerity? Because austerity means that, well, I mean, of course, the performance of duties, but means restraining the senses, right? So how is killing another entity for your senses, how is that austere? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You ever known a nice drug dealer? But have you met pleasant meat eaters? Given charity. Now, are there meat eaters that have all kinds of, they create whole riots about the conditions of the slaughterhouse? Right? How their animals are transported, how they're kept there. They're going to kill them and eat them anyway, but they want them to be comfortable. You know what I'm saying? So that element of mercy on one level is there. But the problem is actually the austerity. Lack of austerity, therefore they don't take that mercy all the way through. You understand? And intoxication, then it's just about your experience, right? When you're intoxicated, it expands your experience to someone else. No, it just limits your experience to yourself. That's the nature of it, you know, because you're aware of the world around you. So people get intoxicated to not be aware of the world around them. You understand? Or to not at least be aware in the way they are aware at present. So it's all about themselves. Right? So they don't care about us. As long as it works for them, they don't care. Because why we'll look at meat eating as morally bad. So therefore, you're not nice, so that'll be, you know, how you say. You know, they'll say it's merciless. While intoxication, you're not austere. You know what I'm saying? You know, in one sense it works, but the point is it's because of our own attachments to that we'll look at it that way. Because the point is meat eating is bad because it's not connected to Krishna. You understand? How do you connect it to Krishna? Right? So that's why it's the problem with it. But we'll take it. No, meat eating, vegetarian stands on its own. Right? That's why some of them will preach vegetarian and not necessarily preach Krishna consciousness. And because they became a vegetarian, we consider that was, you know, some good Krishna conscious preaching. No, okay, you made a vegetarian, they're more pious. But unless they're taking prasad, then what's the meaning? Because the point is whatever you eat has to be offered in sacrifice. That's why in previous ages, then it means those, they could take the animal, put it in the fire, you know, and pull out a new animal. Take an old cow, put it in the fire, and pull out a new one. You know, or the animal is killed and immediately be elevated to a demigod body. You could see him there. So the point is it's through sacrifice, so therefore there's no violence. You understand? So there's no sin. Does that make sense? So therefore the real problem is because of the lack of sacrifice. So that lack of sacrifice means self-centered, means it's not austere. Sacrifice is austere. So the previous ages they did an Ashwamedha yagya. It's austere. You understand? So it's not a matter of mercy. It's a matter of austerity. You know what I'm saying? Why would you kill the animal unless they were required? And then only according to the proper principles. So to do that, you have to be austere. You understand? You know, that's why I said the problem, all the Pandavas were out, they hunted animals. You know, how could they do that? They're pure devotees. You know, but the point is that, you know, that's not the approach. The approach is the duty. You understand? So it's very different. That's the problem. So we take the material environment and make it complete in itself without the Lord. It's only complete when it's connected to the Lord. You know what I'm saying? If I have a machine and it has two wires coming out and I connect the two wires to themselves, right? And I'll consider it's a complete connect, you know, complete, what do you call it? Circuit, yeah. It's a closed circuit. But is it? No, there's no life. You know, so still there's a line coming and connecting to it. But all thing is this circuit that's doing it. So until it's connected to the Lord. You understand? But these are pastimes on the level of the demigods and all that. So that's why it's lower, right? We don't see that, you know, Krishna and animal sacrifice and you know, with the Brajavasis and things like that. There's no need. It's a whole different thing because there is based on all these attachment to the rules and regulations. You're engaging karma. You're dealing with neophyte devotees. Right? So one neophyte devotee has a tendency to not understand or appreciate another one. So that's the problem. So in other words, we'll do it is that if it's wrong to do it, then I'll do it. But if it's someone could do it, then I would want the option. This is the problem. You know, because it means you kill the animal, the sacrifice, and that there's no sin, there's no reaction. But the point problem is next life you'll be the animal, you know, being engaged in sacrifice by this pious, you know, animal who's now the king, right? And you'll get your head cut off, right? But you'll attain to the heavenly planets, and don't worry, next lifetime you'll be the king, and that king, you know, he'll be the animal. So like that, you just go on forever. You know what I'm saying? So that remains. So you want to be involved in that? So that's stupid. So You know, because the point is human beings are given certain things to eat. That's your food. Right? You know, is it wrong that the birds eat bugs? Right? Or frogs eat bugs? No? Naturally, the next one. Okay. Yeah, you understand? So it's not a problem because that's their food. So vegetables, dairy products, that's our food. But eating it without offering to Krishna, that's still sin. So it still has to be offered to Krishna. So it's not our food. I just, some devotees say like that, not just because they don't remember, and so they just go through and it just comes like that. But I'm just pointing out so it doesn't, it's clear. So it doesn't get stuck. Like that. Okay?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaurudeva.